Anna Botkin writes that the Turkmen people of the Khorasan have been called the Rembrandts of weaving. Ms. Botkin is a foreign correspondent who, by her own measure, has spent most of her adult life abroad. For one of those years, she followed the lives of a carpet weaver named Tora and the people that surround her, as well as the life of the carpet that she made. Anna Botkin has called her book about that experience, The World is a Carpet, Four Seasons in an Afghan Village. It's published by Riverhead Books, and I'm very pleased it has brought her to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Where is the Khorasan? Is it in Afghanistan, or is it one of those areas like Kurdistan that's in a lot of different places?
No, it's mostly in Afghanistan, partly in Iran.
So it's in the south of...
It's in the arid plains of northern Afghanistan, just north of the Hindu Kush. So that's where the village where the book is focused.
In a village called Oka?
Correct.
But that's pretty far from the big cities, Kabul, Kandahar.
It is. Most of Afghanistan is pretty far from the big cities. About 80% of Afghans live in the hinterlands.
And what is that village like?
It is a tiny village of cob homes that has no irrigation. The 240 villagers who live there draw their water from two diseased wells. They're extraordinarily poor. Men barter dry thistle-like plants for oil and rice, and women weave the most beautiful carpets in the world.
And they don't make much money for them.
They make pitiful amounts of money.
How long does one of those great carpets actually take to weave?
It depends on the size of the carpet, but between 4 and 9 months.
Do they think of themselves as being Afghan?
Yes, absolutely.
Not as being, because people who live along the borders can often see themselves as being, well, Persian or Uzbek or Tajik.
They're ethnic Turkmen, but they also consider themselves Afghan, yes.
And this is a rather storied region, isn't it? Haven't many wars been waged through it?
About 2,300 years of war, yes.
Going all the way back?
To Alexander the Great's invasion 2,300 years ago, yes.
And then Genghis Khan?
And, well, there were the Kushans in between the Genghis Khan invasion, Tamerlane. You know, skip a few centuries, the British, the Soviets, the Russians.
Napoleon didn't know he could go there as well?
No, he probably wasn't that interested in carpets.
So how much does war and violence define life in Khorasan?
It's a constant backdrop of life. So it probably is the reason why Afghanistan has the highest child mortality in the world. It is the reason why people in the Khorasan have no access to health care or electricity or decent roads. It is very much a main character in life.
Are they affected by the current conflict in the country?
Absolutely.
Is the Taliban present there?
Somewhat, yes.
You describe Oka as quite remote, a place that you weren't even able to find on Google Maps.
Exactly.
And how did you wind up there?
Well, you want my directions. You take a road north from Mazar-e Sharif, which is the main big city in the north. You go for about an hour, and then you take a left into the desert, and then you hope that you end up in Oka.
And did you know someone who lived there? Is that why you went there?
I was introduced to Oka 3 years ago by a man who was working with me as a driver. He brought me to Oka because he said I needed to see it. And when I came there and met the people who lived in this absolutely godforsaken object poverty and created these amazing carpets, I knew that I had to spend enough time to watch a carpet be created.
Well, these people, you say, didn't even know who Osama bin Laden was. You were in Oka when he was killed. What happened when you told them?
They said, Osama bin who? The thing is that...
He had such an important impact on their country.
That's to Western eye. To an Afghan eye, he didn't really matter that much because that country has been, as we talked just now, in conflict pretty much incessantly. So the switch from a civil war without an American involvement to a civil war with an American involvement was just that, a different iteration of war.
So they saw the Soviet invasion as similar to the American invasion? Did they? Were they happy when the Taliban were ruling the country?
I don't think that they were happy with any government ever, because no government ever really cared about the people of Oka.
Now, you had been to Afghanistan before as a war correspondent, but not in this area.
I actually spent quite a bit of time in the north.
So how did that first trip to Afghanistan compare with some of your other foreign assignments?
Well, my first trip to Afghanistan was just before the first payloads of bombs was delivered by American planes in 2001. And I was actually in northern Afghanistan, and I saw a beautiful and abandoned land. And I actually had made a mistake of giving my water to somebody, and I passed out from thirst in this marsh land on the Oxus. And when I came to, I heard children laughing, I heard women talking, I heard the radio crackling about a war to come, and it pierced me. And I have been coming to that land ever since.
My guest is Anna Bhatin. Her book, The World is a Carpet, Four Seasons in an Afghan Village. You spent most of your time in the village with Tawra. Is that how you pronounce her name? T-A-W-R-A?
Tawra.
Her husband, Amanullah, and their children, and Amanullah's father, Baba Nazar, and his wife. Now, I'm not sure whether you pronounce it the same as the city in the United States, Boston. It's spelt the same.
It's Bastan.
Is that a traditional Turkmen name?
Yes, it means garden.
What was the family dynamic like?
Baba Nazar is the hunter. He's also one of the elders of the village. He's a very respected man and a very lucky family man, because almost always his family has some meat for dinner because he hunts. Amanullah.
How many animals are there in the desert?
There are some desert rabbits. At one point, Baba Nazar hunted some demoiselle cranes out of the sky with rat poison. They're foxes. There are not a whole lot of animals. Baba Nazar likes to complain that the animals have become fewer, probably because the guns have become plentiful in the arms of men. Bastan is a very, very busy elderly woman who loves to call me her older sister. This is a sign of tremendous respect, and I love her dearly. Amanullah is in his early 30s, and he just wants to get away. He is a wanderer. He has Odyssean longings. And his wife, Tawra, weaves carpets.
Well, can't they go, as you did, to Mazar-e-Sharif to get away? That's the big, as you said, the nearest big city, although it's not, I suspect, anything like Kabul or Kandahar.
They could theoretically go to Mazar-e-Sharif, and sometimes Amanullah takes a trip down to the city, but it's a day trip, because what will he do there? Will he become one of the migrants who are populating our megapolises now on Earth? What will he? Where will he live with his family? What will he feed his children?
Can you describe how Tawra makes her carpets, the process of carpet weaving?
Every morning, when she's not busy with other things, Tawra squats on a horizontal loom and takes a colored thread, maybe a red thread or a blue thread, and wraps it twice around a white thread, and then cuts it off with a sickle. It's called knotting a carpet.
Now, this is cotton?
This is wool.
Wool.
Yes.
So where are they getting the wool from?
Amanullah or Baba Nazar take a 7.5-hour walk to the nearest sizable town where they go to a carpet merchant's shop who sells them the yarn, and then he will buy the carpet.
Now, we don't normally associate artistry with the kind of environment that Tawra lives in. How is it that something so beautiful can come from a place that's so difficult to survive in?
I think that's the beauty of humanity, that we are amazing survivors and that we can persevere in the most direst of circumstances.
in her case, she obviously has learned from the people who preceded her. How long has the tradition of rug weaving been practiced in this town?
Oh, thousands of years. Not in this town, but in this region. This is the heart of this is the heart of carpet weaving in the world.
Although we also have carpets made in the United States by Navajo, and they share something in common. They both incorporate mistakes into the carpet on purpose.
Absolutely, because, of course, perfection would offend the glory of God.
So at a certain point, do they say, okay, here comes the mistake?
No, a carpet is more of a diary of a woman who weaves it. So, for example, if this morning Thora sat down on top of her loom and then a goat ran into her loom room and she needed to stand up and shoo it away, when she sits back down, very likely she will have forgotten how many knots she'd already tied. So she will accidentally make a mistake.
You track the life of the carpet as much as the family's lives and the weaver. Where does this carpet wind up after she's completed it?
It may wind up in the markets of Istanbul. It may end up in Islamabad or in Peshawar in Pakistan. It may take a plane from Dubai to Frankfurt or to London or even to New York. So it actually may end up on the floor of our listeners' living rooms.
And how much would it likely be sold for?
Thawra will sell her carpet for about $200. That comes up to about 40 cents a day. If I wanted to buy her carpet here in New York, where we're talking, I would probably pay between $5,000 and $20,000 for that carpet.
And there's no way to make that a fairer trade under current circumstances.
No.
I mean, I could see some business person going in there and saying, you know what, I'm going to sell this carpet for $25,000. I'll give you 10%.
That would be wonderful.
Well, maybe there's a future profession. But you also are an artist, and you include your striking line drawings in this book. Most people would have taken photos. Do you think of yourself as an artist as well as a journalist?
I wanted to make this book very tangible. I wanted it to read like a letter, a handwritten letter. And if I could have, I would have written it longhand. My writing is horrible, however. So thankfully, somebody wanted to publish it. But the drawings, I think, reflect the pace at which Afghanistan moves much better than photographs.
And people are happy to sit there for you while you draw?
At first, people were very curious about what I was doing, but they're also very curious about what I was doing in general, because what I'm doing is very odd. But they really enjoyed seeing their likelihoods.
And they obviously enjoy your company. Amanullah's Tara's husband extended an open invitation to you. You say that you could come back anytime you wanted. Are you planning to go back to Akka?
They're amazingly generous hosts. I would love to go back, of course.
How was one greeted when you show up after you haven't been there for a while?
I imagine that I would get a very big bear hug from everybody.
And a glass of tea?
Absolutely. More than one.
Is it possible for you to afford a carpet like this?
Only if I buy it from Thawra.
Or if a lot of people buy this book. So these days, are you working as a journalist again?
I'm researching a book in Mali. I'm herding some cattle in Mali with some nomads.
Mali's another place you've been to. Where else?
I've been in a lot of places in the global south. It's where I'm from, even though I'm from my global south was very far north. I was born in Leningrad, USSR, but I feel quite comfortable in that part of the world.
Do you feel any connection with Afghanistan because of the Soviet relationship to the country?
No, I wouldn't say so. I think that my relationship with Afghanistan is a very intimate and personal relationship.
And Anna Badkhin's book is called The World is a Carpet, Four Seasons in an Afghan Village. It is published by Riverhead Books. Thank you so much for being on our show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.